Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour show focused in on jazz and improvised music news, talk, and topics. Thank you for tuning in to the debut of Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Situation Fluxus is a weekly one-hour show focused in on jazz and improvised music news, talk, and topics. This is a trial 8-week series that I hope will have a successful run and future. So let's dig into the headlines. Though the Chicago Jazz and Blues Festival in Illinois has been canceled for 2021, others are announcing their schedule. The Burlington Discover Jazz Festival in Burlington, Vermont is happening now through June 13th and is offering free programming. For more information, flynnvt.org. New York's Blue Note Jazz Club is back, scheduling performances at the Sony Presents Blue Note Jazz Festival June 15th through August 15th. The performances will take place both indoors at the iconic Blue Note Jazz Club in Greenwich Village and Central Park Summer Stage. The venerable Newport Jazz Festival is finalizing its schedule and signaling its return to Fort Adams State Park in Newport, Rhode Island, July 20th through August 1st. Pianist Robert Glasper is the artist in residence this year. The 50th annual Bix Beiderbecke Memorial Jazz Festival in Davenport, Iowa, runs August 5th through August 7th. The 44th annual Telluride Jazz Festival is go! It runs August 13th through August 15th. Their 2021 schedule is up and tickets are on sale. Held in Town Park, Colorado, there will be free yoga sessions, morning jazz collaborations, and a free historical walk. If you're interested in reading about traditional jazz and improvised music, the Syncopated Times is here for you. It's a monthly newspaper operating from Utica, New York, focusing, quote, on hot jazz, ragtime, and swing. The latest issue features an interview with reed player Adrian Cunningham and historical articles on entertainer Josephine Baker, born on June 3, 1906. Looking for another spot to announce your gig? Consider the J. Landris Brass newsletter. J. Landris Brass is a brass instrument store specializing in the repair, restoration, and sale of brass musical instruments in New York City. They're adding a community gig itinerary section to their monthly newsletter and welcome you to submit information on your public performance as they are looking to, quote, help out and support live music. For more information, jlandrisbrass.com and click on Newsletter. On July 16th, tenor saxophonist David McMurray and Blue Note Records will release Grateful Dedication, a reimagining by McMurray of music by the original jam band, The Grateful Dead. Quote, Grateful Dedication is not only a heartfelt celebration of The Grateful Dead's brilliant songwriting style, but the imagination and soul evident throughout the album exemplify the wide range of McMurray's influences from jazz, pop, rock, soul, reggae, R&B, gospel, and beyond. And Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra with trumpeter Wynton Marsalis premieres Coltrane, A Love Supreme, this evening at 7:30 p.m. on demand through June 16. For more information, jazz.org/Coltrane. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. Recently, I invited two fellow programmers to have a conversation with me about what programmers do. I truly found kindred spirits in Meredith and John. Meredith Hairston, the voice of Evening Jazz, Monday through Friday, 8 p.m. to midnight on WJSU 88.5 FM in Jackson, Mississippi at Jackson State University. She's also the station's music manager. John DeVenish, host of Dinner Jazz, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on Jazz FM 91 in Toronto, Ontario. Thank you both for being here for the debut of Situation Flexus. And, you know, we've talked about the weather in our parts of the country. And I don't know about you and where you live, but the pollen count around here has been deadly. And, you know, it really wreaks havoc with my voice. And, you know, I just haven't been at my best. I drink water and herbal tea. I eat some honey. How do you deal with throat issues, you know, as you're about to go on the air?
John, would you like me to go first?
You go right ahead, Meredith, please.
Well, I am actually a vocalist as well as an on-air announcer, and it's rough. The allergy season in Mississippi, you know, it's murder. Like, seriously, it's a singer and announcer's worst nightmare. I find myself switching voices. That is what I do. I have an evening jazz show, and so that tone is about right around here. When I have to fill in for someone, maybe like a daytime shift, then it's a little bit more of a brighter voice that comes across like this. And so I'm using a different part of my voice altogether. And what I find is when that immediate scratch, if I hear it the night before, I have water, I have OJ, and I take about a tablespoon of apple cider vinegar and I mix it. And I normally find that I'm better by the morning, but I will stay in a particular register if I am just feeling like it's not gonna work out. And I'll choose that register for the day. I'll keep conversations. I'm loud, like generally. And so I'll bring conversations down like this to just kind of make sure I'm not scratching and overdoing it too much.
I'm going to keep that recipe. Thank you.
Well, Meredith, it's interesting that you mentioned being a vocalist. I'm not a vocalist. At least there aren't a lot of people who would say that they've heard me sing and then would call me a vocalist. But I grew up in a family. My mother was a vocal coach and taught music. My younger sister is also a vocal coach now, repetiteur, does that kind of work with opera societies. So I grew up around people with all sorts of remedies for throat issues and allergies. And on top of that, I have asthma. So, you know, I've got puffers and all of those things too. But I liked what you said, Meredith, about the bit about the different voices. And I do an evening show. My show is Dinner Jazz. I also record a week's worth of programs. This is the Smoke and Mirrors, a week's worth of programs in one studio session. So luckily in that way, I know it sounds kind of crazy, but in some ways there's a warped bit of luck in that. I don't have to worry too much about if I get a cold on Tuesday because I've already recorded the shows. So it's going to sound okay. But, you know, the bit about the different voices, I wouldn't say that. The funny thing about radio is that we're all so close to the microphone when we're doing our work. So I think I'm a quiet talker normally. As you're hearing me here, you're hearing me through the microphone to the computer and whatnot. But I'm normally kind of a quiet talker. So I can kind of get away with adapting the voice to that sort of trained voice that you can pull up from the diaphragm and get away with, you know, I think you know what I mean. You can get away with stuff that way, but it's rough. It really is. I mean, in these professions where we use our voices, people don't understand. I don't think they get it.
I find myself telling my listeners, I'm nasally tonight and I apologize in advance. And we keep it moving. I've been doing this show for 11 years, so they know everything about me.
I tell my listeners sometimes that I have a bad case of the Kate and Allies. Remember that show, Kate and Allie? There was a character on Kate and Allie who had a real kind of husky, deep voice. And when I have a bad cold, I've got the Kate and Allies. That's what I tell them. That goes back a bit. That'll be for people of a certain generation.
You know,
that's all I'm saying.
I always get throat colds. And when I do, I've been told I sound sexy. They like that deep husky voice that I have. And, you know, I'm like, and they're like, well, can you keep that? I'm like, no, I'm just sick tonight. But thank you for the compliment, I guess. Who here has been broadcasting during the pandemic? I have.
Me too.
And Meredith, you've been too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have you programmed any special themed shows now that we're coming up to many of our towns and cities lifting restrictions on attending live performances?
Not yet. I would say that our state is a bit divided, particularly our city, whereas certain restrictions were kind of lifted statewide, the capital city restrictions not so much. And so that kind of just puts a damper on things when you're trying to make decisions like that. So no specific programming just yet. But I'll tell you this much, we have only been back in the office, in the studio. We were working remotely since maybe April. So we all got, you know, our laptops, our VT software, remote software and everything, and kind of staggered our schedules to go in and just make sure basically the station hadn't burned down or anything. But we were all, you know, taking care of this things, you know, our shows and what have you from home. And so we are just now having those conversations about live, getting live again, you know, having artists come, travel, shows, all of that. So we're just now having those conversations. But as far as the studio and the station, we've only been back about maybe 6 or 7 weeks.
So we have in our station, we have a performance space, a sponsored performance space. Think of kind of like a larger version of NPR's Tiny Desk, something like that, where we can have a studio audience normally when we weren't in pandemic things. So we could hold about maybe 50 or 60 people, very intimate performances that can happen. We call them live to airs, and they will come in as special sort of insertions into programs at times. So we look forward to that sort of stuff. And also when we go into our fundraising campaigns, It's always fun to be able to bring artists in to perform as part of the fundraising, have them perform, talk a bit about, you know, the support that Jazz Radio is for them and, you know, their experiences and so on. So we have been in this sort of yo-yo position, like just about everybody else. You know, can we bring performers in? Can we not? As the city protocols change, as we were in and out of stay-at-home orders and lockdowns, even booking people and then can't do it. So we're very close to ending what has been a very long stay-at-home order here in Toronto, and we're watching things closely to see if we can bring people in, even if it's the performers and just those of us who are on air doing the fundraising, because there are restrictions on numbers indoors. So that's been kind of the experience. The experience has been the yo-yo, you know, and as far as really programming stuff specifically, I think it's like what you're saying, Meredith, as well. We're still watching to see. It's hard to jump ahead and do stuff because at any given time they might yank that rope back again. So we don't know. It has been a real adventure, you know, just trying to figure out where our feet are supposed to go next. But understanding it, of course, completely. But an adventure not only for us, but for the artists. I mean, there are no live venues happening. Money's only happening through sales of your work, and at best, if you don't have a publicity team to help you with that, it's Bandcamp or some other way of doing that. So, you know, there's a massive struggle out there, and we're doing our best to make sure that people know that stuff is up on Bandcamp for different artists. That's part of how we're trying to support.
We are their best bet right now for publicity, instant publicity. WGXC is opening their studios on Monday, June 7th. We usually don't have live performances in the studio, but we have had people who are already out there and broadcasting from venues and coffee shops. We have one person, he goes around with his phone and broadcasts live wherever he is with his co-host. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. And they've been talking it up that we'll be open soon and we'll be back to more live programming, which is great for us. So why don't we go on to the music? And I'm talking about new music. For those of us who are still getting physical copies, you know, to open that studio door and see a mountain of new releases. Meredith, you're the music manager for WJSU. Have you been able to keep up with the new music coming to the studio?
I feel validated just by you asking me that question, that it's okay to be behind. Justin, if you have to ask me that, then I'm not alone. Okay.
Oh, you are sure not alone. No. I'm on top of things. I don't know about everyone else, but I'm on top of things. So leave me out of it.
I pride myself in this relationship that I have with these reps. And I just knew that I was the bomb.com, and I got all of these praises for being so well organized and this and that, and then the pandemic. And so here's what happened, not to bust out Ernesto once again, but because we are, as we mentioned before we started, as I mentioned, we are off campus. So Ernesto apparently sends to the main campus. The main campus has been shut down and for all intents and purposes, just as our location has been. And it was August, and I'm looking at mail from Orange Grove Publicity that says April, March.
Oh, no.
I'm looking for these artists. Quick thing I'll do, I'll pull up something, I'll check for the name in my email, or I'll just go like on Jazz Week and see where it is, see who's responsible for this. And there's nothing on here. None of these albums are on here. And I'm like, why is this stuff so old? What is happening? What is the disconnect? And so mail was being sent to the main campus. It made its way to our building, which is only about 2 miles away, made its way to our building months later. So my manager initially, when the pandemic hit, said, let the mail pile up. I said, sir, this is all I do. This right here, this mail, this is my job. Like, without this, then I'm sitting at home just recording my show. I said, I have to pick up the music. So I made it a point. I went to the station twice a week and got the mail. And my daughter, who's three, decided to join me in opening packages. This was a fun thing for her. We made it into a thing. And I will say that as soon as I got back into the office this past April, the productivity rate in which I generally listen to music shot right back up to where it normally is. At home, I thought it was going to be, oh, so simple to review music. It is difficult to review music at home. And sometimes I found myself just going to the station simply so I could listen to music in quiet. I said, when I'm sitting at this desk, he says, all you do is listen to music. I said, exactly. I can listen to music all day long when I'm sitting at this desk. If I'm at home, oh, I got to go check the stove. Oh, I got to go check the laundry. Oh, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yes, it was very difficult. But when that first week back in the office, I must have gotten 3-4 weeks worth of music done in one week. And I said, this is where I belong. That's my story.
And now for some music. Except for the first selection we'll hear, everything else is from a new release of this month. Thank you.
I'm on my way, my baby.
We just heard from pianist and producer James Francis, who's worked with Childish Gambino, Pat Metheny, Mark Ronson, Chris Potter, Common, and Marcus Miller. He has a new release out on Blue Note Records, and it's titled Purest Form. We heard the composition Transfiguration, and that featured fellow Blue Note artist, alto saxophonist Emmanuel Wilkins. From the New York City-based duo of singer, songwriter, dancer, and actress Alicia Douglas and bassist Siddiqui Pierre, known as Acute Inflections. Their fourth release is titled 400, and they perform 17 of reggae icon Bob Marley's music. We listen to one from his Exodus release, Natural Mystic. Merging traditional Haitian voodoo with contemporary jazz and beyond, the release Path of Seven Colors by drummer and composer Ches Smith and the musicians calling themselves We All Break on Pyroclastic Records. We listen to Women of Iron. And we started off the set with a selection from pianist and composer Errol Garner's 1976 release, Errol Garner Plays Gershwin and Kern. We heard Strike Up the Band. The remastered set of Garner's music is on Octave Music, licensed by Mack Avenue Records, and along with the other 11 releases from this collaboration, are ready to be listened to during Garner's 100th birthday year. Errol Garner was born on June 15th, 1921. Situation Fluxus is a trial 8-week radio show on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. The success and future of the show depends partly on your feedback. Please send your comments, quips, anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org. Thank you. Conversation with fellow programmer Ron J. Pelletier. He hosts the internet program Jazz from Gallery 41, and it can be found at Gallery 41, that's the number 41, gallery41.com, or jazzfromgallery41.blogspot.com. He also is a host at KCSM, FM 91 in Berkeley, California. His show is called Jazz Oasis, and it airs on Friday nights from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Good evening, sir.
Hello there.
Hello there.
How are you?
I've been very comfortable, thank you.
It's very good, yes. It's a beautiful day here as well. So I listen to some of your shows that are archived.
Oh, I'm really so nice. Sorry.
No, you should not be sorry. You have really nice taste. It's diverse. It's eclectic. You pay a lot of attention to the younger generation of musicians that are taking the music Yeah, I mean, paying attention to some of the younger musicians who are taking the music to unique, creative, genuinely uniquely creative places. It's phenomenal. I mean, we've got to pay attention to the new generation because the music continues to evolve. It didn't stop evolving with Coleman Hawkins. We've got a lot of great musicians who are just doing marvelous things to the music. And I see and hear that you include those musicians and you cover the entire spectrum of the music. And that's what we're supposed to do as jazz programmers.
You know, I had a fun time with the group I interviewed earlier today. So it's nice to get to know people. This is part of why I'm doing this. You know, it's, I mean, being isolated for a year is one thing. There's no reason we can't all talk. We have the technology now.
We do. And we should communicate with each other like this. We should, we as programmers should communicate with the artist, and we should communicate with each other as well. Especially those of us who are actually willing to share what we're doing, more or less. You know what I'm saying? How could I put this? If you're reaching for new and different places, and you're not just trying to program one particular place in this music called jazz, I mean, and you're willing to experiment with the music as the musicians experiment with the music, you got to share that. You got to tell people that that's what you're doing. Otherwise, too many radio stations and too many programmers get caught in past generations of the music, I think. And unless we talk to each other and let each other know what we're doing, they think that we're all programming the same way, and we're not, and we shouldn't. And that's a good thing about the internet. That's why I focus so much on Jazz from Gallery 41. It's my radio station. I could do whatever I want with it. I could play whomever, whenever. I could have musicians play live in my studio here. Well, I can't now. But before the pandemic, I mean, there were a lot of people coming by, live conversation, occasional performances. It was terrific. And it'll pick up again, I'm sure.
I'm one of those people who do not believe that radio is dead. And I think it is important that we keep radio alive for reasons like, oh, you're in town? Come by the studio. Come talk with us. Come play a tune. Radio is part of a community. And when you take that away, there goes part of the community. It's like libraries. They're always fighting for money to stay alive. They're important. They're important meeting places for people. People go to use the internet at the library. People around here don't all have internet. So that's how I feel about radio.
That's what radio is. I hear a lot of that too, that radio is dying. And the hair on the back of my neck goes up whenever I hear that phrase, jazz is dead or dying, which is totally not true, of course. And I am concerned about what's happening with terrestrial radio, though. I really am. The number of stations programming jazz music is shrinking. There used to be more, other than public radio stations, there were every now and again, a commercial jazz station would pop up. And that'd be nice if there were more of those as well. If people who could actually monetize radio in that way and do it. But I don't know. There's no commercial jazz radio station here in the San Francisco Bay Area. There used to be. I started doing radio in the mid-1970s. I was a drummer down in Los Angeles. And I was a drummer pretty much my whole entire so-called young adult life. I played lots of great gigs with lots of great people, from blues to rock to R&B to Art Pepper, Warren Marsh, Blue Mitchell, Frank Rosalino, Hampton Hawes. I wound up on a gig in the mid-70s that was probably the worst paying gig I ever had, but from an educational point of view, it was terrific. I went to a jam session one Sunday afternoon. A friend of mine says, let's go to this jam session I heard about in Redondo Beach. So I went. Next thing I know, the bass player who was the leader says, you want the gig? I said, sure. So I took this gig and I thought it was just going to be a Sunday afternoon jam session and I could fit it in with everything else. One afternoon, this guy walks and takes out his horn and he starts playing. And he's just, he's just wailing. I mean, he just was blowing me away. I looked up at the bass player and I said, who is that? What is that? You know, I mean, he could sort of see what I'm trying to say between tunes. He says, you don't know who that is? And he laughs at me. He says, that's Art Pepper. What? I'm playing with Art Pepper? What? So that was what that gig turned into. It turned into like a 5-night-a-week gig where Jimmy, who was the bass player, seemed to know everybody in LA. And he would invite these people to come play with the trio for those that 5-night period. And that's when he would invite all these people, and it was just fantastic for me. What an education that was for me. And one night, this guy comes in to hear Sam Most, who was there, one of the, you know, Sam and Abe Most, the Most brothers. Sam was a flute player. So was this guy who came in. His name was Tom. And by that time, I had already been hooked on radio. I'd already met radio people a few years earlier. I was really lucky as a musician. Bass player I knew down in Huntington Beach. I was living by the beach at that point. He says, I know this guy, he needs a drummer, and it's at this place called Hungry Joe's in Huntington Beach. And so I go to talk to the band leader. The band leader turns out to be Dave Pike, of all people. I was so blessed. I mean, I got to play with all these great musicians. Playing with Dave was a real hoot. Hmm. Yeah, he sang so loud when he played, but he was fantastic. Anyway, so fast forward to this mid-70s. That was around 60 or 70 or there, about 69 or 70. Anyway, so this guy comes in to hear Sam Most. And when I was playing with Dave, these guys were coming in from the jazz station in Los Angeles. It was KBCA. I grew up on that station. I started playing drums when I was a kid in my bedroom. I had my drum set up to this big FM radio. And every now and again, Art Blakey would come on and I'd play along with it or something. It was great. Unless it was 2 o'clock in the morning, my father would come and say, cut out the Richard, you know. So anyway, I met this guy, Dennis Smith, who was one of the jocks on KBCA when I was playing with Dave Pike. And I said to him, he said, you know, man, I love radio. I'd love to see what that's like. I'd love to come by. And he says, oh yeah, come on by. That's terrific. Come on Wednesday. I said, Wednesday. And he says, yeah, I do a show with Gerald Wilson Wednesday afternoons at noon. And Gerald does interviews. And that's why I wanted to start doing radio, because I wanted to have musicians on the air to talk about them, to talk about their lives in the music, to talk, not just ask them, oh yeah, what's your latest record? Where's your next gig? And thanks for coming by, see ya. That's not why I got into radio. And so Dennis invited me up to KBCA and I'd go there. I went there one Wednesday. I went there the next week. I became sort of a piece of the furniture hiding in the corner, just so I could be there and watch them do what they're doing and see what they're doing and feel what they're doing. And Gerald did a really marvelous radio show. He had everybody from Anthony Braxton to Frank Rosalino. I mean, he covered the gamut. And so eventually this guy, now fast forward back to Redondo Beach again, he comes by and he says, oh yeah, I'm on this little radio station in Santa Monica. And I says, oh, yeah, I've always really wanted to do a radio show. And wouldn't it be cool and all that sort of thing? And he says, yeah. So he comes by the next night. He comes back with a book, FCC Rules and Regulations. This is when you had to get a license to be on the radio. You remember that?
Yeah, I had to get a license.
Yeah, cool. So anyway, he hands me this book. He says, study it. Go get your test. You pass the test. Let me know. And I'll put you on the air. I said, okay, that sounds very good. I'd like to do that. And so I studied the book. I read it cover to cover like that first night, actually. Read it again. Went and took the test, passed it 100%. Didn't miss a thing. And I tell Tom, and he says, okay, I can put you on Sunday evenings after the early show at this club ends. Come by the station. You could go and you could do whatever you want on the air. Really? And there was also something happening on Sundays at the Century City Playhouse in Los Angeles. And this guy was putting together these concerts at the Century City Playhouse, where he invited people like Wadada Leo Smith. I would invite musicians to meet me at the station on Sunday evenings. So I would invite musicians to come by. And there were a lot of musicians who lived in LA at that time too. LA was really, I mean, it was having a revival of what was in earlier years, the South Central jazz scene in Los Angeles, down in Watts, where all those clubs were lined up and down Central Avenue. Anyway, so I could invite anyone and anybody to come by the station and meet me there. And I'd just open the mic and just talk story for hours with them. They'd bring their instruments, they'd play, and it was just marvelous. I was in heaven doing that at that point. That little tiny station, by the way, when I left the station, if I left before sunrise, I had to turn the transmitter off. The transmitter was in the next room behind this big plate glass window, had a couple of switches on it, like something you would see in an old Boris Karloff, or, you know, all these bulbs in it. So I would turn the station off if I left before sunrise. If I didn't leave before sunrise, the next person who did the morning drive show on that little radio station would come in and just take over. But starting then, I amassed a literal mountain of recordings. Whenever I could get a musician in front of an open mic, whether it be in my living room, whether it be with a cassette recorder or wherever it was, I started amassing all these conversations. Then I started doing a program at another radio. That station, by the way, turned out to be KCSM, not KCSM, KCRW in Santa Monica, which, yep, which is now a flagship NPR station in California. That guy, Tom, was Tom Schnabel. He wound up working at the station for many, many years. Anyway, I then also, through funding from the Musicians Union in Hollywood, Local 47, I went to go talk to them. And I says, I have an idea. I could do this radio show at this station in North Hollywood that has a loft. And I want to do this program where I could invite musicians to bring groups to the station, play on the air, live on the air, and have an audience there and invite the audience for free. And all of, and the president of the musicians, what was his name? Oh, that's not important. He says, yeah, sure. I like that. I like the idea. Let's see. Let's put it together. Let me see how much money I could get you. Oh, that sounds good, I said. So I started doing this thing on Saturday afternoons at this other radio station, and I could invite anyone and everyone that I wanted. And again, I had Billy Higgins, I had people like Ray Pizzi, other musicians who lived in the Los Angeles area. That was sort of a thing with the Musicians Union. Invite local musicians, so-called local musicians. But he was talking about people like Harold Land and Blue Mitchell and all these other people. So it was heaven.
Thank you for tuning in to the debut of Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 11 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month at 11 a.m. on 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, Tune in, and the Wave Farm Radio app on your smartphone. Remember, your feedback is needed towards the future of this show. TheJazzDisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.